Jack Ablin joins us now, Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital, crescentcapital.com. Welcome to the show again, Jack. I hope you're doing well.
We're doing well. Doing well, John. Thanks for the invitation.
Yeah, markets are doing well, too. Are you surprised by what's happened since the election?
Actually, it's funny. Not really. If you compare, and I did for our advisors yesterday, compared the one-day move in the markets yesterday against the one-day move in the markets in November in 2016, and they're remarkably similar. Small-cap stocks up a lot. Large cap stocks up, international down, China down, Mexico down. Actually, China was actually up yesterday. It was a bit of a reversal, but Mexico certainly was also in the losing end of the equation.
And that's maybe just a function of anticipating tax policy?
It's tax policy, it's tariffs, it's just, you know, general rhetoric. And what we have found is that the markets tend to move in line with the new president and their anticipated policies from the election day to roughly inauguration day, so probably about 6 weeks or so, and then they kind of go back to their regular business as usual. So one of the things we found pretty remarkable was while China was probably the biggest victim, if you will, in the day after the election in 2016, 1 year later, it was up 49%, one of the highest returning markets that year. So I think that while everyone's paying attention, certainly to Trump and policies and the administration, and as well we should, I think once we move into 2025 and beyond, I think a lot of the themes that kind of will play out will probably take over.
Maybe the market will eventually notice then the net effects of tariffs. There's no guarantee that Donald Trump will be able to actually enact his campaign promises along the lines of tariffs. But if he has both houses in the Congress, I thought they're going to do that. And I thought the market would react negatively. It was the exact opposite.
Yeah, it is remarkable. And one of the things I worry about tariffs is, in particular, unlike, let's say, tax rates and the like, a president can simply impose tariffs by executive order if they make the case or even just claim that's in national security interest to do that. So even there, if he didn't have Congress behind him, he could potentially impose tariffs nonetheless.
Real quick on the Fed today, quarter points, pretty safe bet, right?
It is. I think one of the things that we're seeing in response to the election is that investors are dialing back their expectations for rate cuts into the future. So if you go out to, I think it's roughly March or April of next year, even in just over the last 4 weeks, we have one rate cut off the table between now and then.
One last thing then. What do you think about the housing market and all the attendant industries that rely on the turnover of real estate, or for that matter, the manufacture of new homes? What do you see on the horizon for real estate?
Well, right now, we're in a bit of a bind. The fact is that real estate, while if you own a home and you're enjoying its unprecedented value, that's great, but it is the least affordable it's been in our nation's history. Only 38% of the housing stock is available, or affordable, I should say, to half of our nation, and normally we'd like to see that above 50% if possible. In fact, we're at levels now less affordable than we were at the peak of the housing bubble in 2006 and 7. Not suggesting that we're going to have a crisis of any kind, because we're not writing these zero down adjustable rate mortgages anymore. But I think that this is something that the administration is going to have to tackle. And if they do, that's good for home builders. It's good for that housing stock if we can somehow figure out a way to make it more affordable to more people.
Jack Ablin is the Chief Investment Officer at Crescent Capital. Interesting stuff today, Jack. Thanks for your insight.
Thanks, John.
Bree Fowler frequently joins us from CNET.com. She's a senior writer there. Nice to talk to you again, Bree.
Hey, great to be with you.
Talk to me about Canada and TikTok.
Yeah, Canada is ordering the dissolving of TikTok's Canadian businesses. It's forcing them to shut down their offices and pull out of the country. But TikTok users in Canada will still have access to the app.
Well, then what's the point of that?
I think it's more of, you know, them saying that, you know, under Canadian law, they can look at foreign investments in the country that may have to do with national security. And they say that, you know, the decision was based on evidence that they've pulled over the years from intelligence and government partners. So they see a reason for this. Critics are less than enthusiastic about this because they're saying that Canada is going to lose any oversight that they would have had if they were in the country.
Yeah, if I had to pick my druthers, I'd say, we'll take your business. You can office up here, but we won't let at least young people or, I don't know, any people use it. What's happening in the United States on that front? What's going on there?
Well, the Congress had passed a law to essentially ban TikTok if it isn't sold to a party that the U.S. likes within a certain amount of time, basically a year. Now, you know, we're going to have a change in administration and party control. So whether that actually happens, it's kind of up in the air right now. So I guess we're going to have to see.
Do you know what's going on in Australia with social media?
So Australia, they have decided, they are announcing legislation that is designed to keep kids off social media, all kinds of social media, until they're 16. And it's putting the platforms in charge of doing that, and it says they're going to hold them accountable if they don't.
How would they do that?
Well, that's kind of up to them to figure out. And you know, that is going to be tough as far as, you know, kids just have a way of getting, you know, faking ages, getting beyond things like that. So this may be one of those things where, you know, the intentions are good, but the execution is going to be a little hard.
But it's interesting that you say that they'll hold the platforms responsible. So even if it's a law that is difficult to enforce, if that's Facebook or TikTok's responsibility, they're not saying that about Facebook, are they? What platforms are we talking about here?
It's all social media. So we're talking about X, TikTok, Instagram, Facebook, everything. They just want to make it illegal for not for kids and parents. I mean, they wouldn't be held accountable, and, you know, kids aren't going to go to jail if they're on Instagram. But they want the platforms to, you know, keep kids off until they're that age. And, you know, how they go about doing that is up to the platform. But, you know, I think it's going to be pretty hard.
Have you ever been on a page where it says click here to say you're over 21? I think the last time I saw it, it wasn't pornography I was looking at. I think it was an alcohol ad,
right?
Maybe a gambling site. But anyway, maybe they do that with pornography too. But I mean, so then you say yes, or you scroll the thing around to when you were born, and then you verify that way. Well, that's pretty toothless, isn't it?
Yeah, I mean, it's my local brewery does that for their website to make restaurant reservations. You know, my birthday is January 1, 1901, and no one has ever said boo about it.
Tesla stock is doing what?
Tesla stock is doing really well. They had big gains yesterday, and I just checked, and their stock is still up today. The coming Trump administration apparently is going to be very good for them in the eyes of investors.
How so, I wonder? I mean, I know they're buddies, but I know he's gave him a lot of money, but Tesla is essentially a green thing, and the Trump administration doesn't seem to be all green. Anyway, what's the connection here?
So, yes, they are buddies, and he did donate a lot of money, Elon Musk did. But what happens is, you know, the Trump administration is, they're backing off on these green initiatives, e-vehicles, and that means that subsidies and tax incentives and things that might have gone to less established companies aren't going to happen now. And also the idea of cars coming in from China that would be cheaper than Tesla's and be a larger volume than Tesla's, that's probably not going to happen either. So Tesla continues to dominate the market. And, you know, it's open roads for them right now.
I suppose this is water under the bridge, but what's the status of the $1 million a day contest that Elon was running for the Trump campaign?
Well, the last that I had heard, and I think it was the day before Election Day, the judge had said that it could go forward. But, you know, it's pretty much moot at this point. Although, you know, we'll have another election in 4 years, so who knows?
Right. In other words, maybe it is wise to yet address that, but who knows what's going to happen. I wonder how much money Elon then ended up giving to the Trump campaign overall, because it was something like $60 million a week or some ridiculous amount. Do you recall?
Yeah. The number that I have last check was $119 million that he spent to, you know, mobilize Trump supporters and just, you know, back him in general. The $1 million a day was kind of a drop in the bucket, actually.
Yeah, right. It was a great gimmick, if nothing else. I'll just leave it at that. I think it was a great gimmick. But Tesla's stock tends to vacillate, doesn't it? It seems to me like one day it's up a lot and the next day it's down a lot.
Yeah, and so do their quarterly results. You know, interest and sales of EVs have been down overall lately. You know, a lot of people who have them or want them already have them. Tax incentives aren't as good as they used to be. And, you know, people are still worried about just the infrastructure not being there. I mean, it can be a great second vehicle, maybe, if you need a grocery getter in the suburbs. But, you know, for people in urban areas who don't have a garage to plug their car into, or people out in, you know, flyover country that may not have charging stations all over the place, it's still a tough sell.
Senior writer at CNET.com, Bree Fowler. Always nice to talk to you, Bree. My best to everybody over there, and join us next week.
Thanks a lot. Have a good one.
This is WGN, John Williams and Pete Zimmerman here. Pete regularly asks us to, or organizes for us, an interview with Jim Dahlke from TechNexus Venture Collaborative, and they follow very closely the whole tech scene and all of the angel investing that is going on in Chicagoland. And the other day they were talking about, we talked about on this show, a business called Hydrosome Labs, which had some startup funding, and they make very tiny bubbles that can be used in very interesting ways. And it was just a little story that Jim was telling us about, and I thought, that's fascinating. I'd like to know a little more. So let's learn a little more from Paul Gadbutt, who is the CEO of Hydrosome Labs. Paul, you're on WGN Radio. Welcome.
Thank you, John. Good afternoon. Good to be with you.
I'm just going to read from what they were saying. A biotech startup creating bubbles using force and pressure, conducting more than 100 scientific studies over many years and collaborating with investigators and universities. And the uptake is that you will, with tiny bubbles, improve nutrient uptake in skin care, and beverage clinical trials have shown to improve hydration and uptake of key ingredients. It makes our skin better and our plants grow better. Is all of that true? What's going on here, Paul?
Yeah, for sure. So, yes, that is true. The applications are really way wider than all of that. Water, of course, is our main ingredient, and that's ubiquitous. It's in so many products, so many things. And so we as a company are trying to focus our efforts into kind of just two or three main categories. And those are, as mentioned, cosmetics and beverage / hydration. And then actually, truthfully, earlier this year, we had a massive breakthrough in fermentation. And we did a joint study with the University of Illinois down in Champaign, and we were able to demonstrate speeding up fermentation times by about 25% and actually doubling the biomass that was made within that fermentation tank. So something that really moved the needle in a big way. And those three categories are where we spend all of our time and all of our efforts right now on the science effort.
Was that project with U of I to create meatless meats?
Actually, we did a non-pathogenic E. coli. So take the bad stuff out of E. coli, and in this case, you want to create E. coli as a delivery mechanism, and they use that product of E. coli in a whole multitude of ways. And so we were able to show a big benefit there, and of course, that has ramifications across a lot of things. But yes, alternative proteins is an area that is also calling on us now to want to see if we can help that business by getting more into price parity.
So what do? You this is water, and you've made like a bubbly water. I know what that's like.
So sure. Let's. I'm going to give you some context. So this is even for me. I'll be clear. I'm a non-scientist. I'm an investor type of individual. I got involved in the company back in 2019, and so these bubbles. We start with water. Very simplistic, coming out of the tap water from a municipality. We take that water and we clean it to its cleanest state, to an something that's called 18 megohm, which is like medical grade water. And then at that point, we have a precision engineered piece of technology that we've patented and took many years to develop, and it creates these ultra fine bubbles. And for clarity, and this is going to sound like I'm crazy, but in a grain of salt, we put about 100 billion. That's a billion with a B, bubbles. So they're so small, you can't see them. They're actually not able to be seen unless you have the right type of instrumentation. We use something called NTA, where we can actually use some dynamic light scattering and lasers to see these things and understand the size and the scope and the concentration. So very, very small. They have a negative charge on the outside, so they attract nutrients. And then the small size of these bubbles have a very high pressure. So if you think about scuba diving, every time you go down 33 feet, that's an atmosphere of pressure. Our little bubbles are somewhere north of 30 atmospheres of pressure. So when they bring this nutrient delivery to a living cell, living organism, they bring this breath of oxygen or air as well. So you bring nutrient and oxygen, and cells love that, and happy cells produce a lot more cells in their things like fermentation. When we look at it in a cosmetic, and let's use the idea of a moisturizing cream, those ultrafine bubbles actually allow those actives to penetrate deeper below the surface of the skin. So three areas of skin, kind of simplistically, the surface, the stratocorneum, and then the epidermis. And so that top layer, that stratocorneum, is usually a barrier with difficulty getting things through that and into the epidermis. Our bubbles have been shown to be very effective as transporting that across. And so effective, we actually came out of stealth mode early this year and started commercializing. And one of the first companies we commercialized with was Cindy Crawford and her Meaningful Beauty cosmetic line. And we're continuing to broaden that scope now and working with a lot of other companies.
Yeah. I'll give you Gwyneth Paltrow's number, too. This sounds like something that would be up her alley. So is it that the bubbles are so small that they're able to penetrate or deliver these nutrients so much better? But when I open up a can of bubble sparkling water, say, or a LaCroix, the fizz comes out right away. This doesn't go flat instantly?
It does not. And so we're getting into some physics here, but the terminology and trying to get some levelized terminology, anything above 1 micron would be considered a macro bubble, and anything below 1 micron would be considered a nano or ultrafine bubbles. So if I use 1 micron and I give that a number, and let's call that 1,000 at 1 micron, we're making bubbles that are sub 50 nanometers. So very, very small, starting to approach the size of virus, if you can get your thoughts on it. So they don't, and when you get anything below, say, 500 nanometers, kind of normal physics go away. So our bubbles don't rise up out of solution. They're not governed by buoyancy. They actually stay within the liquid and go through something that's called Brownian motion, which is, have you ever been in a sunlight ray you see coming through the window, and maybe you see dust particles floating in the air? They're not necessarily rising or falling, but rather just floating in the air. That's a demonstration of Brownian motion. We're doing that in liquid.
Well, I've wrote down 100 billion bubbles in a grain, in an area the size of a grain of salt. So,
yes.
So then that water then is used for the creation of all of these products. It sounds like you maybe don't even know all of the potential applications.
Yeah, so that's true. We not only do we not know all the potential applications, we don't even really understand all of the mechanism of action. So we understand the delivery. We think of it as this hand-shaped agreement between the cell and the bubbles carrying. But we've done a number of other, you know, getting a little wonky here, but studies where we've gone out and done RNA sequencing to understand the cells and themselves, how they uptook these bubbles and the nutrients and what was expressed further and less. We've used these bubbles in coming back to our hydration discussion, and we fed that to rodents. And we saw a big improvement in short-chain fatty acids, and I know we're getting a little crazier, but that really lowers inflammation in the intestine.
Well, I was just wondering.
There's big applications around that.
Yeah, Paul, we're out of time. I'll invite you back another day, but I mean, could I get a six-pack of this? Is this something that a person could just drink and have some benefit from?
They could, and we do make water internally for ourselves and our friends and family, if you will, but we are in discussions with a major brand about commercializing and becoming a beverage that consumers will be able to grab. And hopefully in the next couple of weeks, we'll know where those discussions end.
Paul Gadbutt is the CEO of Hydrosome Labs. This is a Chicago-based biotech startup. And it's fascinating stuff, Paul. Stay in touch and put it in everything. I'm sold. Thank you for your time today.
Thank you. Enjoyed the time. Good luck on the rest of your day.
HydrosomeLabs.com. HydrosomeLabs.com is their website. More business news on the Wintrust Business Lunch with Steve Grzanich.
Start your timer. It's time for the Wintrust Business Minute, sharing Chicago's business news of the day. A new research center operated by the University of Illinois Chicago will study the public health impact of climate change and ways to intervene that are nature-based. The UIC Center for Climate Change and Health Equity is backed by funding from the federal government. The center will receive $4 million over 3 years from the National Institutes of Health. The NIH's Climate Change and Health Initiative is funding 21 centers nationwide, including the one in Chicago. A team of experts in public health, medicine, engineering, urban planning, and biological sciences will consider interventions like green infrastructure to minimize the consequences of climate change. United Auto Workers in Belvedere will vote today on whether to authorize a strike against Stellantis. The UAW claims the automaker is backing out of an agreement to open the Belvedere assembly plant. The plant stopped operations last year. Stellantis says it's delayed the reopening due to market conditions. I'm Steve Grzanich, and that's your Wintrust Business Minute.
Now the business of food, Steve Alexander.
Yeah, thank you. And if somebody offers you a Scrooge McDuck-sized pile of money, do you say yes? No, was the answer in Morton Grove. And more about that after I thank the Chevy Silverado for sponsoring us today. There's never been a better time to put a Silverado in your toolbox. Find out how at ChevyDriveChicago.com. Okay, no thank you was the response from Lifeway Foods in Morton Grove to an offer to sell the company for $283 million. The Kiefer Company's board of directors said the offer undervalued the company, so no thanks. The offer came from global giant Danone, which already owns about a quarter of Lifeway, so maybe it'll come back with a higher offer. Stay tuned. Meanwhile, the origin story of Lifeway and how Kiefer became such a big business in the United States started right here in the Chicago area.
My dad started it 38 years ago.
That is Julie Smolyansky, whose family emigrated from the USSR when she was a child.
In 1986, my dad founded Lifeway with this idea of bringing this staple product from the land where my ancestors were from.
And as she told John on the Wintrust Business Lunch,
in our basement in Skokie, Illinois, I was able to taste the very, very first batch of kefir he ever made. I remember it vividly. I was a 10-year-old kid.
Kefir, by the way, for the uninitiated, is
like a fermented probiotic protein food product, kind of similar to a yogurt drink or a smoothie.
And it quickly became a hit.
He started the company when I was 11. He took it public when I was 13 in 1988, became the first Soviet immigrant to take a company public.
Julie's dad, Michael, had been grooming her to take over for him someday. Someday came tragically in 2002, when Michael died of a heart attack at the age of only 55. Julie became the youngest female CEO of a publicly traded company at the age of 27. At the time, Lifeway was doing about $12 million a year in sales, now more than $200 million a year and worldwide. It hasn't all been smooth sailing, including 2 years ago when her mother and brother tried to get her ousted as CEO. But she prevailed, and we will see what's next. On the food calendar, it's National Pickle Day. I'm Steve Alexander. That's the Business of Food on 720 WGN.
Yeah, the Bears are taking on Kansas City. I don't know if you've heard about that. It's going to be November 23rd. This would be the Great Lakes Adaptive Sports Association Chicago Bears wheelchair football team. The coach is Jason Spheyer. Jason, you're on WGN. Welcome to the show.
Well, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
So you guys,
talk to you.
Yeah, so tell me what the team is. Who is in these chairs and how does that work?
Yeah, so Great Lakes Adaptive Sports Association is a large adaptive sports agency here in the Midwest. Actually, one of the largest. We've got 1,300 athletes that compete, but we actually host and run the Chicago Bears wheelchair football team. So you basically got 20 guys from around the Chicagoland and kind of all over Illinois that come together for 5 to 6 months, and we compete in wheelchairs all over the country against other teams sponsored by other agencies and by the NFL.
So how does the play work? Is there tackling, passing, running? Is it flag football-ish? How does it work?
So it's flag football-ish, but it's one-hand touch to down the football, but it's full contact at the point of contact, if you understand what I'm saying. So full contact blocking, 7 players on a field. You've got a center, 2 guards, usually 3 wide receivers and a quarterback. Traditionally a passing game. We do run the ball from time to time, but it's more of a passing style game. But it is absolutely full contact and, you know, blocking and a lot of chair contact, guys actually flipping out of their chairs. And it's just a fast, really physical style of football, which is fun to watch and fun to be a part of.
So if you had the ball and I wanted to get you, tackle you, say pull, would I ram my chair into you? Is that how it works?
That's part of what happens. That you only have to tag me, but think about wheelchairs, the width of a wheelchair passing by each other. When you're trying to tag someone in it, the chairs usually make pretty good contact and create a pretty loud bang when you got 20 pounds of titanium coming together.
Are the athletes, were they able-bodied athletes at one point? Who's competing?
Sure. Yeah, it's a mix. You know, so for myself as the head coach, I was an able-bodied athlete for 44 years, able-bodied person, an able-bodied athlete. And after disability, I became a chair user. So we've got a good mix. Some of our athletes were, you know, had congenital birth defects that they became disabled at birth. Some of them had childhood cancers that caused amputations. Mm-hmm. Some of them had accidents similar to myself that caused spinal cord injuries. So it's a real good mix, but everybody is disabled at some level that they wouldn't be able to play a traditional able-bodied sport, if that makes sense.
Where and when is the game then? As I said, November 23rd. Sounds like there's been a season, and we're down to Chicago and Kansas City.
We're down to Chicago. Yeah, we started the season. We played our first tournament back in early August here at home at the Wintrust Corporate Park over there in Rosemont. And then we ended up going to Vegas about five weeks ago, where we won our Chicago tournament, made it to the finals of the Vegas tournament, and lost to Kansas City, who we're going to play here in the finals, 13-12 in a nail biter. So, there's traditionally 4 tournaments that lead up to the championship game. You have to win a tournament to qualify. We're just super excited about coming up Kansas City here in the 23rd to try and bring home the Chicago Bears championship.
I want to watch. Can I watch it online?
We're hoping that it's going to be live streamed on a pretty stable network. They're going to be hopefully live streaming it on YouTube and on Facebook, but we don't have that decided yet. But if you were to go to the GLASA website, greatlakesadaptivesports.org, you would be able to go ahead, or GLSA, org, you would be able to find that link if it is going to happen, or watch our social media page.
Let's report back, Jason. And GLASA.org is with one S, GLASA, G-L-A-S-A, GLASA.org. Congratulations in advance, Jason, and stay in touch.
Thank you so much.
Terrific.
All right, we'll be in touch. Thanks for having me today.